Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. If you've just opened a new business, here's an example, perhaps, of what you don't want you to hear.
I don't understand. So what, you do what?
Well, I take the stuff that you don't want, and then I sell it on eBay.
So, but you don't actually sell anything in the store?
No, I don't.
So why do you have a store?
I don't know.
Okay, that clip from the film The 40-Year-Old Virgin illustrates that having a good idea is just the first step in starting a successful business. You also have to clearly communicate your service to potential customers. There are a lot of hurdles to cross in starting a business, and it can be a daunting process. Joining us today to talk about how to overcome the many challenges to starting a business is Ed Paulson. He's author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Starting Your Own Business. The sixth edition. Ed will be at the Northwest Library in Columbus for a free learning seminar tonight. For more information, go to the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Welcome to the show, Ed.
All right, thank you for having me.
First of all, I have to ask this question. It's something I ask of everybody who does an idiot book. Should a complete idiot start a business?
There's nothing idiotic about starting your own business and taking control of your own future. And if an idiot starts it and doesn't do any planning, then they'll probably end one of those statistics that doesn't make it through the first year.
But a really smart person can start a business and feel like an idiot by the time it's all over with.
It's very complicated. And I've talked to so many people who start a business and they go, oh my God, where do I start? And that's really what I try to do with the book is help people walk through the steps to get them up and running.
If you're just joining us, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and I'm talking with Ed Paulson, author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Starting Your Own Business, 6th edition. If you have a question or comment for Ed, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can check out our Facebook page. How do you know, first of all, that you're the person that can manage the risk? Is it a type of person?
Starting your own business is different than working for somebody else, because if you're not somebody who can get up and go to work and motivate yourself to do something without somebody else breathing down your neck, it's going to be hard for you to be successful starting your own business. You have to be a self-starter of some kind.
And how do you know that about yourself? Should you go out and take one of those personality tests or something like that? Because a lot of people work for somebody all their lives and maybe they don't really know.
It's a good point. And I think people look to their own life to see, are you the person who typically attends the party that somebody else throws, or are you the person who throws the party that other people come to? Are you the one who is planning the vacation that everybody else goes on? Or are you the one who says, oh, thank God you did all that, and I'll just show up and hop on the bus with you? So if you're somebody who's always taking initiative, you're planning, you're moving forward, you're the coordinator, you're driving events, you probably have the temperament naturally to be able to do that.
Right, because a lot of it does have to do with temperament.
Very much.
Very stressful?
Very much.
Have you ever started your own business, or do you just write about it?
No, I have. I've fortunately had been a number of businesses that I've started that have been successful, and unfortunately, I've been with a couple that haven't been as well. And so it's painful when it doesn't work, but it's just really wonderful when it works. It's a blast.
How much did the success of your successful companies have to do with the failure of your unsuccessful companies? In other words, what did you learn?
That's a great question. And what you learn is you learn to get out of your own way. Quite often we go into business and we think we know how it's going to go, and I'm going to make it turn out the way I think. Well, unfortunately, and actually unfortunately, just the reality is the marketplace determines where your business is going to go. And opportunities will come your way that you don't expect, good and bad, that you have to learn how to deal with and adjust to. So if you can't keep yourself motivated to move forward and stay on track while being flexible, given what's happening in the marketplace, you can get yourself in trouble.
We're going to be talking about the region coming up pretty soon with a representative of the Ohio Small Business Development Center. But in general, is the timing of the 6th edition anything particular? Are things getting a little bit better right now? It's a good time to start a small business?
Personally, think it's a great time to start a small business because, as you were talking about motivation, so many people right now are in a position where they're either underemployed or unemployed. And to me, I say, why not look for a way to use your skill set to work for yourself, especially if you think you're not being utilized to your full capacity?
What about is everyone thinks about maybe starting a business as a full-time venture. How often do successful small businesses or that turn into big businesses even start out as part-time?
Quite often they start out that way because people will see an opportunity and they'll think, I want to try that, but I don't want to give up my day job. And so they'll moonlight it. They'll try it on the weekends, try it on evenings, partner with somebody else maybe to round out some skills or temperaments that they don't have. And then as it starts to be successful, sometimes they look at it and go, wow, I'm actually losing money by working for somebody else. Why don't I just take this thing and do it full time?
Once again, 614-292-8513. If you have a question, a call about starting your own business, you can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. There are a lot of franchises out there for sale. I don't know what it's like right now, but I know a few years ago even it was kind of, some of them were going bust and some of them were going boom. It kind of depended. How do you know when something like a business that's already set up for you is the right way to go?
You mean as a franchise?
Yes.
Well, probably the most important thing to understand about a franchise is what you're doing is you're buying their expertise. Because you could start this idea on your own. But there's all this risk and uncertainty about starting it on your own because you don't know how it's supposed to work. You go to a franchise, and the franchise supposedly has a model that's already been proven to work. And if it's already worked someplace else, then they think it can work for you. Then that puts the odds way in your favor to have that be successful. So you always want to pick whoever you're going to be in a franchise with. Make sure you pick your partner properly. Check their track record.
Someone you like, too, their whole personality, because they're going to be kind of breathing down your neck, aren't they?
Actually, only in the early days. Usually what happens is once you're up and running, they will back off and let you do your thing because they want to move on to the next person who's their next franchisor. I don't think the personality is as important as the idea and the support they're going to give you, not only to get up and running and get through the all-important first year, but also on a recurring basis, how are they going to support you on a local or national level with the fees that you're going to pay them? They're going to use that money and hopefully use it in a way that's going to benefit you and the other franchisors.
Buying a franchise is very expensive usually.
It can be. It can go into hundreds of thousands and or larger dollars, including build out or whatever. But they don't always have to be. They can be there. I don't even know the numbers. There may be hundreds of thousands of franchise opportunities right now in the country. So they run the whole gamut of what it might cost to get in.
Is franchise anything from a Mary Kay representative to a retail, you know, storefront type operation or not?
It's a franchise. The way to think of a franchise is somebody typically has had an idea that they started, and that idea has shown that it worked. Then what they said is, wow, we think we could teach other people to do this. And so then they set up a franchise operation where you get to leverage off the name of the successful franchising organization. And then they tell you how to get started. They help you pick your location, how to set up your funding, help you with funding, help you set up your operation, help you hire people, help you with marketing, sales, all those things. So it really can, if they're doing that for you and expecting a fee back on a recurring basis, it's a franchising relationship.
Will franchises sign up anybody with the money? Is there any vested interest on their part to screen candidates and make sure they get the right people in the job?
If any good franchising organization will do that, because if you go into, let's take Denny's. If you go into a Denny's and have a bad meal, what's the likelihood you're going to want to go to another Denny's and have a meal?
Mm-hmm.
And so the beauty of franchising is if you go across the country, let's take Jiffy Lube. If I get my oil changed at a Jiffy Lube in one city and it goes well, then I'm more likely to go to Jiffy Lube in another city and get my oil changed. Where if it doesn't go well and my engine gets blown, I'm never going to go back to Jiffy Lube again. So the franchising organization, the franchisor has to be sure that the people they're putting in the network are the right people for their franchising idea, because they could pollute the perception of the franchising organization around the country if they do a poor job. So any good organization is going to screen its candidates.
When you're starting a business, should you plan on doing everything yourself? You know, the one man, the one woman shop, or the mom and pop shop or something like that. Is that a reality anymore? I can tell you right now, I couldn't do it. Everything.
Well, there goes the myth of
no matter what it is.
There goes the myth of the 20-hour work week making six times what I'm making today. Right?
Okay. Right. Right.
You know, and so the reality of it is when you first start out, what you're trying to do is do as much as you can with as little money by spending as little as you can, because capital is so important. Money is so important for you first starting out because you don't have any sales. So until you start generating sales, until money starts coming into the organization, what you're really trying to do is stay alive, keep your head above water long enough so that until those sales do start coming in. And so quite often people will keep their expenses low by working out of their house or using other people's equipment if it's a manufacturing organization, partnering with somebody else so they use their equipment in the evening when they're not using it, those sort of things, until they get up and running to the point that the revenue stream, the sales, are to the point that they can pay for the operation on their own.
How do people find those other people that they can partner with?
Networks are so important. And knowing other people in the industry, whether they're colleagues within your industry or other successful business people who know other successful business people. Business people, for the most part, want to see other business people succeed. Competitors, it gets a little complicated. But for the most part, people want to see other people succeed. And I've found that most small business owners, there's a camaraderie that's there if you open yourself up to it and works through other small business organizations. You can form partnerships that can help you find those folks.
We have an email from Grant. He asks, what do you think the most overlooked step is when starting a new business? What is the most common reason a business fails in the first year?
Well, let me take that
kind of two different questions.
I was going to say, let me take that as two different questions. The first, I think, common mistake people make is to not engage their family, especially if they're starting a small business that is going to be something that's a local basis, even if it's going to be a national organization, because your family starts the business with you, and you're going to be giving up evenings, weekends, things like that, to help the business be successful, and you can engender ill will. And almost animosity between the family and the business if you're constantly away taking care of this business and not taking care of your family. So if your family, getting family buy-in, I personally think is hugely important. The family's a partner in this with you. So I say get them involved. And the second question was?
Well, the first one was the most overlooked step when starting a new business, and you're saying engage your family. Second one is, what is the most common reason a business fails in the first year?
Lack of sales. Just not just real simple. I mean, you can, huge sales allows you to cover all kinds of mistakes, but if you can be perfect and have no sales, and you're not going to stay in business very long because you're going to be spending money more than you're making it.
And so they've been stepping, you know, going deeper into that. There's lots of reasons why there's a lack of sales.
Customers, people with the checkbook, they always make the decision, right? You think that they're going to buy from you. You can be all excited. You believe this is the greatest idea since Saran Wrap. They're going to buy it from me. Well, they don't think so. You're in trouble.
My guest, once again, Ed Paulson. He's author of the 6th edition of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Starting Your Own Business. If you have any questions or comments for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page. That's a good way to do it. You can also tweet us at WOSU All Sides. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation about the challenges of starting your own business with a couple of local people. Christian Duber, he's the owner of the digital marketing firm The Launch Farm and co-founder of ColumbusStartups.com, and also Michael Bowers, district director of the Ohio Small Business Development Center. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Your annual support of 89.7 NPR News is our largest source of income. Your gifts make up the funds we use to pay for the news you listen to every day. It's easy to renew your 89.7 NPR News membership. Visit us online at wosu.org/renew, call 866-897-9678, or respond to our mailing by sending a generous check. Your annual gift provides us with the foundation of listener support. Thank you for renewing your membership with 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from the Homeport Noble on Long Condominiums, offering home ownership opportunities in the King Lincoln District, featuring a diverse community with a mix of historic and newly built homes and condos. Details at homeportohio.org/NOBO on Long.
A basic membership for 89.7 NPR News starts at just $60 and comes with our airfare program guide and a grocery tote. Visit WOSU.org.
Thank you. Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This hour, we're discussing the do's and don'ts of starting your own business. Still with us is Ed Paulson. He's author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Starting Your Own Business, the 6th edition. Welcome again, Ed, to our show.
Thank you.
Ed will be at the Northwest Library in Columbus tonight for a free seminar. So if you want to check that out, go to the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Joining us now, Christian Duber. His second startup is the digital marketing firm, The Launch Firm, and he's the co-founder of ColumbusStartups.com, a site that tracks the startup scene in Central Ohio. Christian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And also in the studio, Michael Bowers. He is the district director of the Ohio Small Business Development Center. The center is holding an event this Thursday. It's called the Ohio Growth Summit. There'll be workshops on new ways to start and expand a business. So for more information, go to the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides and get it all there. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hey, thank you.
And once again, listeners, if you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513. How much does a small business development center help people when they're actually starting a small business? How many people out there are seeking help with an organization like yours, Mike?
Well, with the Small Business Development Center, or SBDC, here in Central Ohio, we cover 9 counties, and we're based at Columbus State Community College. So the bulk of our activity is actually coming out of Franklin County, but we'll cover 9. There's actually 39 SBDCs around the state of Ohio and almost 1,000 around the country. And what we do as a Small Business Development Center is our primary thrust is to provide consulting advising services to small business and small business owners. And we'll work all the way from, I have an idea, I don't know anything about business, and I need some help figuring this out, or I've been in business for a number of years and I want to grow, I need to get a loan, I haven't gotten a loan in this economy before, or I need investors. This is something completely different for me. And what we'll do is we work in an advisory type service. So it's one of those where you need somebody to talk to, you need somebody to help you, you need somebody to kind of help you identify the right steps, the right resources, the right networks. Those are things that we can do as an SBDC. And the great thing about the SBDC is that everyone should take advantage of it because they've already paid for it. It's a publicly supported entity through the Small Business Administration on the federal level, the state of Ohio, the city of Columbus, and Columbus State. So in essence, through your tax dollars, you've already paid for the service, so you might as well jump on and take advantage of
it. Okay, so when you go in there, there's no fee at all?
There is no fee for the consulting and advising services. And you can, we have people that we've worked with for years that will come in, and it's just kind of an advising type of thing on a regular basis. Some people will come in, we'll work on something specific with them, and they'll go off and do it, and a year or so later they'll pop back up and, hey, I need to do something else. So all of the advising services are free. Most of the training services we do are either free or certainly subsidized. So, for example, you mentioned the Ohio Growth Summit. That is a event that we put together on an annual basis where we bring in speakers and national speakers, et cetera. And, you know, it's much more discounted than you would find anyplace else because, again, we want to help the entrepreneurs. So it's all there.
And Ed Paulson, you're nodding your head a lot throughout all of this.
I think this is
a no-brainer.
I think it's wonderful that you have that people who want to start their own business have these resources available to them right there in their local area. And I think they're unknown to a lot of people. So I think it's wonderful that you're getting the word out on this.
And really, it can be something as simple as I have an idea.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we do things where we have a set of activities we do around people that want to start a business. And they'll come in, I want to do this, or I want to start a business of this type, or I want to get a franchise or something like that. And that's what they know. But they don't know anything about getting sales, like Ed talked about. They don't know anything about really understanding their market, or they all think they got to get a loan. Well, you don't really need to get a loan. You need to get customers. So that's the kind of thing where if you've not been in business before, you need somebody that can kind of work alongside of you to help you do that.
Well, let's take a call from Zach first. Hi, Zach. You're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me. My name is Zachary Traxler. I'm a local small business owner. I'm actually friends with Michael Bowers.
Okay.
I just wanted to comment on the importance of using, like, the SBDC and ECDI. I was just lifting some heavy equipment. we used his resources and ECDI to start our business 2.5 years ago, and it's been a tremendous inexpensive help in keeping our business open. The biggest challenge as a small business owner, like you guys keep talking about, is customers. So we source everything locally to try and keep all these customers coming back to us. And, you know, the SBDC and ECDI have been a huge, huge help in connecting us with other small businesses that need our services. So any small business that's looking to start should definitely check into it and exhaust all those resources if possible.
Okay. All right, Zach, thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. 614-292-8513. If you have a question or comment for our guest, we're talking about the do's and don'ts of starting your own business today. Also still with us, Christian Duber. His second startup is the digital marketing firm, The Launch Farm, and he's co-founder of ColumbusStartups.com. It's a site that tracks the startup scene in Central Ohio. And Christian, once again, welcome to the show. And what's the number one, what's a startup versus a new business, and how is the scene in Ohio, in Columbus, Ohio?
I think that's a great question as far as, do I have a startup? Do I have a new business? Am I a consultant? And I think it's really the context that you're talking about, or who you're talking to. For example, my wife, she's a PR consultant. She's on her own, but she's really a startup too. Her brand is her name. She's got an identity. She's got a website. She's got a practice. She's got an office. But she's also a consultant. So I think it's really the context. Startups right now, just because of, I think, the technology scene and the media coverage, it kind of has this sexy patina now where everything is technology. We keep hearing about these technology startups that came out of nowhere, two guys in a garage and a software application. They sell it 2 years later for billions of dollars. So I think in the general public, startup kind of takes this emerging technology, patina now, but it's a new business.
Let's go to a caller right now. Ed in Reynoldsburg, you want to know what resources there are for young business owners. Why young? What do you mean by young, first of all?
Great show. Thank you so much. My daughter's 21, has this idea. And while I was talking to your producer, you were speaking to the gentleman before Zach's call, who appeared to have some of my information. And they threw out some fast acronyms that I missed. She's 21, has this idea, and I can't help her, you know, because I'm a dad who doesn't do this. So, you know, how can I help? You know, what can be done? What resources can help me regionally or locally or internationally to, you know, jumpstart her? I've already heard one. If you could repeat that, and any advice you can have for me to give her.
Well, first of all, I just want to repeat, this is a good time to remind people that they're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. The 9th annual Ohio Growth Summit is this Thursday. It's at Columbus State. For more information, Ed, go to WOSU.org/allsides. And then also, Northwest Library in Columbus, the one up on Hard Road, is hosting a free learning seminar with my other guest, Ed Paulson, author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Starting Your Own Business. That's tonight. Again, for more information on that, go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides, okay?
Cool.
But I'm going to let Mike Bowers jump in there. And Mike is from the Ohio Small Business Development Center, and he was the one throwing around all those acronyms, I think.
Yeah, that's a big thing, a part of my business. When you deal with kind of government-funded entities, you get these crazy acronyms. It becomes an alphabet soup of what's going on. But, you know, I think that if you have an idea, if you're younger, you're older, it really doesn't matter. I think that you just really need to figure out, okay, who's your market, how you need to find your customers, and, you know, what are you going to sell to them that they want? And there's a lot of resources out here to support entrepreneurs. I know that, you know, here in the Columbus area, I've been doing this type of thing in Columbus since 1999, and prior to that, I worked in banking. So I've probably spent 25 years working with entrepreneurs here in town. And, you know, since 1999, specifically in the nonprofit or government-supported entity. And here in Columbus, there is no shortage of individuals, business owners, advisors, groups like Christians that will help just kind of mentor, get people thinking about the right things that they need to do. The Small Business Development Center, Like I said, we are based at Columbus State Community College, and our role is to work with anybody, whether they be, we deal with teenagers, we'll deal with people in high school, we'll do young entrepreneur programs and different things. And we have an individual that's one of our customers that's 85 years old that has started a business. So they can come and work with us. We can really give them an understanding of what's involved, how they need to find customers, and what do they need to be thinking. It's all, some way degrees, it's a mindset of what they need to think about, because like you said, you haven't done it before, so you don't know. We have experience. We've been doing these things. We've worked with a number of entrepreneurs. We have over 1,000 people that come in to us on a one-on-one basis. Forget about the training, which is another 2,000 or 3,000 people a year. We have 1,000 people that'll come in and just work with us on a one-on-one basis.
All right. Ed, and did you want to add anything?
Actually, I would like to add something to that. Thank you. I think you're going back to an earlier question you asked me. When you leave corporate America, you typically have worked in a role. You were in manufacturing, you were in marketing, you were in accounting. And so what happens is if you're, say, a salesperson and you needed something from accounting, you sent a memo to accounting, and accounting took care of it. Well, when you run your own business, you are accounting. When you run your own business, you're also personnel, and you're also sales, you're also marketing. In other words, very few people have expertise in all those different areas that they can be functional and good at it. So you need help. And so why not reach out, know where your limitations are, and then reach out? Because everybody's a novice at something. So learn how to reach out and grab resources that can help you get over that hurdle.
All right, Ed, thank you for that call, and good luck to your daughter. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you have a question or comment. Christian Duber, you are the owner of the Launch Farm. Tell us about what the Launch Farm is and how does it differentiate itself from Mike does. And
there's a good way to segue what we've been talking about today is I had to work a good decade in a traditional kind of marketing agency before I got the bug to want to go do something on my own. I talk to students that are sophomores, juniors, coming out of Ohio State, CCAD, you name it, and they're ready to jump today. I think there's a different mindset of I can do this. Maybe it's because of their resources. Maybe it's because of technology, what they're reading in the press, the Facebook effect. But the scene has changed so much that these kids are ready to jump the day they graduate.
There seems to be a very different generation come, much more risk takers than I remember growing up with. When I was growing up, it was get, you know, the job at the big newspaper if you could, or the big corporation or something like that.
That's exactly it. And I was the same way, too. I thought I should, you know, put my time in, learn the ropes, you know, still find a field you want to play in, be around professionals that do what you're passionate about. But I think there is that risk mentality where I'm going to graduate and I'm going to give it at least a year to try this. I'm going to see what I can do. I'm going to look into Columbus startups and all these other organizations and surround myself with these mentors. But I am going to find a way to at least try it for a year. If that doesn't work, there's kind of this, well, I'll fall back into a corporate job at that point. But I'm really going to give it a go.
You know, and one of the things that I found having worked with the SBDC for so many years is that when I first started, entrepreneurship, small business ownership at Ohio State was just not something you did. And they didn't have the entrepreneurship program. They didn't have any of those types of things because it wasn't academic, right? CCAD, that's not what they did. And really over the last probably 7 to 8 years, when you think,
yep,
you started to see this kind of growth within the schools as an academic pursuit. We have it at Columbus State. CCAD has just launched a new center around that, the Center for Entrepreneurship at Ohio State. This is what's really supporting people's desire to go out and grow and move away from this, okay, I'm going to go get this corporate job, which is what especially Ohio State and some of the bigger schools were saying, we're going to train you to go work in a corporate environment. Now they're saying, if you want to go to a corporate environment, that's fine. But if you want to go out on your own and do some other things, we're going to support that too.
Ed, does the book, The Complete Idiot's Guide to Starting Your Own Business, does that work in both scenarios?
Meaning corporate America?
America and, you know, working with corporate America and coming from that and making that work for yourself later on.
I think innovation and entrepreneurial thinking is applicable whether you work for a large corporation or work for yourself. It's a little more challenging within a large corporation culturally because, you know, large organizations have structures and all of a sudden you become a little entity within this large entity, and you're trying to move this organization in a new direction. It's like a tugboat pulling a large ocean liner. Mm-hmm. But that kind of thinking is what creates the next generation of a large corporation. And entrepreneurial thinking for a small organization, small business, is critical because you have to be adaptable. You have to be flexible.
There's different kinds of small businesses. Startup, I guess one way I distinguish startup is maybe somebody who's coming up with this great idea and they eventually, as quickly as possible, want to sell it and make millions of dollars versus somebody who's going to buy a franchise for a burger joint or a submarine shop or something like that and sees this as a long-term lifestyle that they're choosing to, I guess, in both cases.
I think, and that's, it's a great point where, Ed, in your book, I think you mentioned there's a dog grooming business that's a startup. And in that same world, there's also the tech entrepreneur that has this amazing change the world idea.
But they want to get credit for it. They don't want to be giving Apple
credit. Correct. Yeah. And there's, they're both startups. They're just completely different takes on it, but they're definitely startups.
And I think people, having lived in Silicon Valley and spent time in Silicon Valley like I did, I was with one company. We grew our revenues tenfold. We went from $17 million to $170 million in sales in 8 months. I mean, that's an astronomical ride to go through. And when you're thinking about a startup that's of that scale, there's a whole different caliber of management, whole different caliber of funding. The whole structure of the organization changes when you're in that sort of an environment, as opposed to somebody who just wants to start a dog washing business. And so, but on the other hand, if you just want to support yourself, which is what a lot of people do, they just want to have control of their future, and I just want to support my family and have control over how I do that, you don't need to make $100 million a year, most of us, to support our family. So more modest goals, more modest revenue goals, more modest business planning allows you to get a handle on something that's right for you. And you don't have to be the next Mark Zuckerberg.
And yet, I wonder how many people go in, how many small businesses we take for granted, things like Cheryl's Cookies or whatever it might be. They started out small, and there's something about them that just takes it to the next level for some reason. Michael Bowers, can you ever see that person when they're walking in?
Well, I think what you see is you see someone that, number one, has a passion around this, and that's the biggest driver, I think, for small businesses. I mean, if they're willing and open to understand business and understand the growing a business and everything involved, like Ed's talked about, then I think that's you can take that if you have a strong passion to move that forward. The other thing is that somebody like, Cheryl's or some of the Jenny's Ice Cream and things like that. I mean, they did start out small, but they persevered, but they had a good product and they were able to find a market to sell that into, as opposed to so many people. And I'm sure that Christian sees this all the time working with the folks he's working with, that they get really focused on build. And it should be first focus should be on validation and customers. Then we'll figure out what they actually want us to build. But too many people want to build first because they say, I see this as something that the community needs or that a market needs, and they haven't gone out and validated it.
Another example of that, too, is so we talked about, do you see, does this person walk in your door and you just know this is the guy, that's going to build this next, rule-breaking technology or whatever. And I think a lot of what these organizations do that we're talking about today is they match up people with the right mentors and teams where every once in a while I'll come across an inventor that just has the most amazing idea, but I could never put him in a room with investors because he's kind of that back room, maybe a little bit disheveled, not quite professional, but his ideas, he's exactly what you want in an inventor. So if I can put him with a really savvy sales team and a branding team and kind of get everyone to do their role, he can still create, whether it's apps or technology or whatever this thing is, he can do that, but he'll have some teammates and mentors that can do the rest and interface with investors and do the selling.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about starting your own business today, whether it's a startup style or a small business you want to run from your home or from a retail location. If you have a question or comment, 614-292-8513 is the number to call. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. I have a few emails to get to when we return. I just want to remind folks, Northwest Library in Columbus, up there on Hard Road, is hosting a free learning seminar with Ed Paulson, author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Starting Your Own Business. That's tonight. For more information, go to the link on our website at wosu.org/allsides. Go there as well for a link to learn more about the 9th Annual Ohio Growth Summit this Thursday at Columbus State. They'll have workshops on new ways to start and expand your business. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, after years of tough economic news, the economy seems to be picking up and pulling up interest rates. We'll look ahead at what the eventual end of rock bottom interest rates will mean. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
This afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News. Tuesday night, join WOSU-TV for an inside look at the life of Johnny Carson, the king of late night. At his peak, Carson commanded a nightly audience of 15 million viewers, double the current audience of Jay Leno and David Letterman combined. Despite the fame, Carson chose to remain a very private man. But American Masters unearths clues about Carson's childhood, early days in the business, and personal and professional life. Watch American Masters, Johnny Carson, Tuesday night at 8 on WOSU-TV. Your WOSU Public Media member card benefits are now even better with the Member Card Benefit of the Month. Each month, show your member card at selected partners for extra discounts. The benefit of the month for June is the Wexner Center for the Arts. Enjoy 2-for-1 admission to the galleries all month long. Support 89.7 NPR News at the $85 level and receive the WOSU member card as your gift. Just visit WOSU.org. And thank you for supporting 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. This hour, we're talking about the challenges of starting your own business. Still with us, Ed Paulson, author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Starting Your Own Business, 6th edition. Ed, once again, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And also with us, Christian Duber. He's the owner of the digital marketing firm, The Launch Farm, and co-founder of ColumbusStartups.com. Christian, as well, thank you.
Oh, thanks for having me.
And Michael Bowers. He's district director of the Ohio Small Business Development Center at Columbus State University. Thanks again for joining us.
Sure thing.
Mary B. from Dames Bond sent us an email. She says, there are several great local resources to help women and men decide whether or not they have a good concept, how to develop a plan, and how to market it. I say there is no reason an entrepreneur will fail if they utilize all of the resources in Columbus. Women's Small Business Accelerator is a nonprofit featuring classes and incubator space. Dames Bond Marketplace allows people to test market their products as an incubator before you decide to do your passion full time. That's down in the Short North. Easy to find on the internet if you want. Thank you, Mary B. Another great resource. We've kind of been skimming over it. It's where Ed Paulson, you're going to be tonight. That's at the local library, Columbus Metropolitan Library.
I'm so glad you brought that up because people, I think, take the libraries for granted and they don't realize the wonderful information resource that the library is as an entity, but that the research librarians are as a group. They are it's a talented group of people that when you get into the business planning aspect and you're trying to figure out how large is my market, who's going to buy this, how many people out there potentially could buy this product or service. I call them the ideal customer. Well, how many are out there? Where are they? How are they located? Those people and the databases they have and the research librarians, they can help you find that detailed information that allows you to put validity to your projections.
And likewise, Mike Bowers, you said it's a big turning point or place to turn for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Columbus Metropolitan Library System is probably the biggest partner for us at the Small Business Development Center here in Central Ohio, because we can talk to people about what do you need to do? You need to research. You need to understand your market. But, you know, they don't know how to do that. And you can go to professionally trained business research librarians that are at the Columbus Metropolitan Library, and they can help you do that. Plus, the library system has a lot of these demographic databases that literally cost thousands of dollars that you would never be able to pay for yourself. And you don't need to. You need a library card, and you can access that stuff from your home.
Email from Matt in Cincinnati. He says, I am looking at starting my own business using my skill set as a consultant and fine arts. I think in fine arts. I used to work for a franchise that did pickup, packing, and shipping of anything and everything. I specialize in art but can also do other items. So he writes, I've been given a skill set that is not being utilized and I know is needed. How do I get clients and close the deal? Well, that's kind of like asking you guys to, you know, solve all of his problems for him. But I think it's a good question to know how you define a skill set and how you pull that together. And you talked about bringing together groups of people that can bring what they need.
Right. I think that's what's helpful with something like Columbus Startups or even Launch Farm is when you talk to someone like the email you just mentioned, and just by talking about examples of other businesses that might be kind of similar to the skill set he mentioned, it gets that person thinking about how they might be able to do it on their own. The same thing with a father that called in and his 21-year-old daughter had an idea. And it's that same thing. Maybe they don't know exactly what they can do, what they can sell. They know what their skill set is, but when they come into a place like Columbus Startups, Launch Farm, some of these organizations, they're surrounded by other kind of like-minded entities and people, and it gets them thinking about it. It might even, you know, result in a coffee meeting the next day with a person that's in the exact same field, and it really just gets their mind rolling in the right direction.
That's that networking thing that, Ed, you brought up earlier. You talk about in your book, The Business Plan, and that's something that is very daunting to a lot of people. It sounds horrible to me. What's the business plan, and is it complicated and scary as it might seem?
Well, actually, the answer is no. It doesn't have to be. And I think that think of a business plan as a simulation. If you look at your business and you look at starting this business, what you're trying to figure out is this business going to make me the amount of money it needs to make so that it's worth taking the risk on? I mean, you're going to invest not only money but time. And so and that time could be used doing other things. So is this business the right place to do that? The business plan is your best guess, your best simulation of what that will look like moving forward. And all it is a guess. And hopefully it'll be a live document that as you learn more things, you'll adapt the plan so that you can change its goals and objectives. But it also becomes – so it's a way for you to prove to yourself it's a good idea, but it's also a way for you to communicate to others that that they want to work with you. In other words, if I've got somebody who I need as a key employee, I say, why don't you come work with me? They say, what do you want to do? That's a natural question to ask, and then I could tell them, but if I can give them a plan and they can read it, they go, oh, I believe this. Now I want to sign on, and it's particularly true for investors. If you want to go to an investor and say, I need $100,000 or $200,000, it would be a natural thing for them to say, for what? And how do I know I'm going to get that money back? The plan is a communication document as well as a simulation tool. So I'm a firm believer in plans, but it doesn't have to be War and Peace,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, it can be 5 pages. It could be for typical smaller businesses, it'll probably be less than 20 pages. I don't know if you guys would agree, but it typically would be less than 20 pages. Now,
because who wants to read through War and Peace?
And you don't need that much for a reasonably local business. Where if you want to do a national startup like the next. You want to get $5 or $10 million in venture funding, that could be a pretty substantial plan eventually. The first round would be what's called a feasibility study, which is sort of along the lines of what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My experience, the things we do at the SBDC is that we talk a lot about planning and preparation. I think people get really intimidated, like you said, Ann, about the plan. And they'll go online and they'll pull down the templates of this and the templates of that. I had a gentleman that came in to me, and he actually dealt with one of my staff that he was trying to put this business plan together. You know, the typical, you know, product, market, marketing, you know, financing, the template type of plan. And he was working on that, and he came in to me, and he said, you know, I've been doing this, but it's not helping me. I don't know what I'm going to do with this. So I backed it off, and I said, okay, well, what you've got to do is you need to start looking at what are the steps you need to take? What are the milestones? What's happening in between that? I'm sure it's a lot of stuff that you talk about, Christian, with the startups, because this concept of validation and milestones and, you know, the lean startup and pivoting and all these types of things are what folks need to think about. But they need to write some sort of plan of action for themselves first. Then if you're going to go to financing sources, or then if you're going to go to partners, then you put it in their format. If you've done all the work up front for yourself, then putting it into a format is pretty simple.
Yeah. Christian.
What's interesting about that, too, is I'll have a lot of potential startup founders come in through, say, a launch farm, and they think they can skip the business plan step because they're just going to crowdfund this thing on Kickstarter. They're just going to go to the magical website that's going to give them millions of dollars for their idea. But what's brilliant about crowdfunding sites like Kickstarter is that it basically forces you to have a business plan to submit your project through them. So whenever I hear someone coming down that road, I empower them to go through it because it's going to force them to take the steps to plan out their business.
It's very impressive, some of the profiles on Kickstarter and how thoughtful people have become in putting out the proposal.
And you have to. You almost have to be a personality now. I mean, yeah. You're selling yourself as much as your concept, and it comes down to your personal branding and your video and the style of your approach to selling what you have. It's quite a bit of a show.
Well, let's talk about social media, the internet, the whole thing. I mean, how would this have been in the first edition, a reference to that in the Complete Idiot's Guide to Starting Your Own Business, Ed?
No, social media, when the first edition came out in 1995, was sitting around at a coffee shop.
So, right.
Not along the lines of this. No, the book, it's been fascinating for me to watch the marketplace and the needs of the readers evolve over the, 18 years that the book's been out. And so this new edition is, once again, it's the new incarnation. It's been revised, updated, so that it includes, how do you create a web-based business? What about a technology-based business? How do you use social media and social marketing to be able to get the word out there? And that may not be right for all businesses either. Everyone should be engaged, but some can rely on that, but others can use that as a supplement to what they're doing elsewhere, too. So we talk about a lot of that.
I'm trying to think of what would be bereft of any social media or internet connection. Because before we do pretty much anything now, we look it up on the internet because we can sit in our backyard and do it. Oh, we want some outdoor lighting. Oh, okay, let's go on the internet and see what's out there.
It's the first thing we said to each other as we were meeting out front in the lobby is, hey, you know, I just saw your tweet and I just retweeted it. You know, before we even introduced ourselves or handed out business cards. So it's that prevalent.
It is. And yet you don't want to think that isn't necessarily, once again, without the big idea, without the great product, it doesn't matter.
I think it's important to differentiate between using your website as a place for information,
yeah,
and then using social media as a way of creating a community. And I think we create a sense of community using things like Facebook, Twitter, and that's where people get referrals. And if you think about it, where does any business get its best customers from? They get it from their existing customers who refer other people in. And social media is a way to allow that to happen. But I think to have a website you just have to have a website. If you're going to have a business, you have to have a website. And just take, even if it's two pages and it's static, having a presence on the internet, I think, is hugely important. But differentiation between those two.
But yeah, I think you'd be amazed. I mean, you've probably seen this, Ed, but there are so many businesses that don't have that social presence or don't have an online presence. I mean, we deal with that all the time. And I do workshops on social media and putting this together. And I'm thinking, okay, well, I've been on Twitter since 2008 and I get this and, you know, everybody knows how to do this. And I mean, I'll go into a class and it's like, well, okay, if I sign up for Twitter, then what happens at that point? Or how, I don't understand what I'm trying to do. And Ed hit it right in the head. I mean, it's about building a community. It's about building folks that understand what you do. It's speaking to people that want to talk to you and bypassing that traditional advertising where it's let's just interrupt a whole bunch of people and hope somebody gets it. It's let's build a community of people that want to talk to us, and literally they will work themselves down through the sales funnel and share your ideas and bring more customers to you. And that is really the value of social media. But, I mean, we see it all the time. People just have absolutely zero clue what they're doing with this, and they're not online.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to make a comment on it, that I think sometimes two people think that I have a social media presence, now I'm in. I built it, now they'll come, right? Well, if you don't have a product or a service that the marketplace needs, then they're not going to buy from you. Even if you have the slickest marketing, you have the most comprehensive social media, if I don't need it, I'm not going to buy it. And that goes back to your earlier point of vetting the idea. Find out if other people think the idea is as good as you think it is.
We're just about out of time. I wanted to bring up one more topic, the issue of going local. Some very successful businesses in Columbus, including Jenny's, try to only use local contractors, local sources if they can. They have a business ethic that they embrace. Is there any trend in that, or is this just very sporadic now? And how big of a deal is it?
I think it's a huge deal. I think it, just like, you know, going to the local farmers market and supporting the farmers that are getting fresh strawberries down the street, it's the same thing with matching up the right vendors and the right kind of professional service organizations, where maybe there's an amazing software shop in the short north. They need some public relations from another person that's in Dublin. They need some packaging help from someone that's nearby. And there really is some pride in sourcing all of your vendors locally. And you can find every professional service you need here in town.
Well, that's just about all the time we have. Christian Duber, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Christian's the owner of The Launch Farm and co-founder of ColumbusStartups.com. Also, Michael Bowers with the Ohio Small Business Development Center. Michael, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Reminded folks, the 9th Annual Ohio Growth Summit is this Thursday at Columbus State. For more information, go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. And Ed Paulson, author of The Complete Idiot's Guide to Starting Your Own Business, 6th edition. Ed, thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Ed will be at the Northwest Library in Columbus tonight for a free learning seminar. For more information, once again, go to the link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.